This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Have a listen to this. Have a listen to this.
Now, that kind of talk this week dragged Australia's share market to a two-year low. There are, of course, complex reasons for that.
He was the big spender. The big spender.
Doing the grocery shopping can take a huge chunk out of the family budget.
And that's finance.
Hello and welcome to Comedian versus Economist, the summer edition. We'll be back with our usual program on February the 2nd, but today we've got something a little bit different for you. People often want to know what Thomas's origin story is. I'm not sure what people want to know that, but apparently some people do. And look, the truth is that after my mother abandoned Thomas in the woods for being such a hairy man-child, he was taken in by a tribe of economists. And that is where he learned how to manipulate spreadsheets with his bare hands and construct macro forecasts out of giraffe poo. Yes, that's right. Look, the idea that he studied economics at the University of Queensland and worked at the RBA is pure fiction, just designed to protect this terrible secret. Anyway, to bolster the credibility of this this amazing cover story, Thomas has somehow convinced the students at the University of Queensland Economics Society to interview him about being an economist, and this is what we have for you today. So think of this as a study of an economist in economics. I'm sure you're as excited for this as I am. I have listened to it already, and it's actually a really fascinating insight into Thomas. I really hope you'll enjoy it. Special thanks to Francisco and the team at the University of Queensland Economics Society and the Worldonomics podcast. And remember, we'll be back with our usual schedule on February the 2nd. Enjoy.
Thomas, welcome to the Worldonomics podcast.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me. Super excited to be here.
Yeah, so we've got a bit of a fun question before we get started. I think it's very fitting for what's going on at the moment. So if you could compete in any Olympic event, what would you compete in and why?
Ooh, I think gymnastics, because those guys are just so cut. They just look amazing. I actually did gymnastics when I was a kid, but never got to that level of expertise. But I think there's like a particular mindset that, like, there's a steel mind that's required to be a gymnast. And I'd kind of love to know what that is. I think my mind's a bit soft and flabby. but I'd love to know what the discipline's like to be an Olympic gymnast. I'd love to live in those shoes for a day.
Yeah, that's a good answer. that would be mine as well. Yeah. Okay. So did you just want to briefly introduce yourself for everyone listening?
Yeah, great. So yeah, my name's Thomas. Currently hosting the podcast Comedian versus Economist with my brother. So I'm the economics half of that unit. My brother is a stand-up comedian. And we sort of got into that sort of when COVID hit. He was calling me up with a bunch of questions. He's like, what should I do with my super? Should I bail on the markets? Should I fix my mortgage rate? All these sort of questions. And we're talking it through and he's like, wow, this is really interesting. I think a lot of my mates would like to know this. And I was like, well, we could record it if you like. And he said, that's a podcast. I went, oh yeah, that is a podcast. And so we started a podcast called Minimum Chips and we did 6 episodes. And then got picked up by the Equity Mates guys. So Equity Mates Media have a bunch of great investing podcasts, very focused on the markets, on stocks. And yeah, they kind of like what we were doing. We're sort of bringing a macro flavor. They're much more focused on particular stocks, but we sort of just bring a look at macro influences. And yeah, I've been doing that for a bit. I studied at UQ studied my studies there in 1995. Did an economics and arts degree with a Japanese language degree, and did my honours there and graduated in 2001, and then went to work at the RBA as an economist. So I spent 6 years there, at the RBA, and then went on a colorful journey from there to here. So we were like 15 years. I don't know if we want to catch up on all of that, but that's the basics in terms of economics.
So I guess we'll just start like at the beginning of that journey then. So what initially motivated you to study economics?
Funny story, actually. I was in year 11 and I didn't know what I wanted to do, and I thought I was maybe going to go into medicine. I thought I'll just keep my options open and I'll do all the physics, chemistry, biology, maths one, maths two, and all of this. And I rocked up to my new school in year 11, and my career counselor sort of, you had to check off to make sure you're hitting all the requirements. And my career counselor went like, "Whoa, this is a pretty heavy workload. You've cut it out for yourself here." And I was like, "Oh, is it?" And he's like, "Yeah, you back one of those off. Why don't you drop chemistry and do PE?" And I love sports. So I was like, "Okay, great." So I did that. And then it turns out that this guy was the PE teacher, and then I was in his class. So he was kind of boosting his own numbers. But if you didn't do chemistry one, you couldn't do chemistry two, and then you couldn't do year 12. And so that one decision sort of ruled out medicine. Not that I was really that into it. And then I was like, "Oh, so now what am I going to do?" And my mate's mum was teaching economics at high school. And so I picked it up and I just really loved it. I just really loved the logic of it. I really enjoyed tracking the influences of one thing into another. Looking at that systems level view of the economy and what's going on. It had a real relevance. We're talking about things I'm hearing about in the news and things that were right there in my face. And so I sort of fell in love with it there, and that's sort of how I got into economics, and that's what sort of inspired me to pick it up at uni.
So when you went into uni and started studying economics, did you have any idea of where you wanted to end up? Like, did you structure your degree in any way for a specific job, or did you just kind of find yourself?
Yeah, I was really just following my nose. And I think what I liked about economics is that it felt like it... I could leverage it into a number of different fields. It felt like it just a good strategic move when I didn't really know what I wanted to do. So I could go into the public sector. It seemed to have a lot of value there. I could go into sort of business, those sort of fields. There was a focus on numeracy, which I knew was valuable. And I think a lot of organizations, you know, value that. It felt like it was just going to be give me options. And I think that's what I was valuing at the time. And then through that, then I just sort of followed my interests and with the sort of course content I picked up. But we didn't have a lot of flexibility, but I really love the sort of philosophy of economics kind of stuff that we were able to do. And I did my honours in game theory, which was a lot of fun. So I don't know if there's much of that going on there now, but yeah, that was pretty cool. So, I think the thing I realised once I got out and started working at the RBA was that a lot of what you're doing is really just sort of setting the frameworks of knowledge rather than knowledge itself. And a lot of it, you know, I felt like we got a lot of on-the-job training at the RBA, and that really set you up to be a macroeconomist in the public sector. And that's where a lot of the work was done in those first years. And so, yeah, I think I really valued the degree because it just set you up gave you a lot of options.
So you mentioned a few times that it does like a degree in economics and Japanese in your case, sort of sets you up with options. How did you end up at the RBA? And moving on from the RBA, did you sort of always see yourself doing that at some point? Or was it like 4 or 5 years in and then you're like, maybe I should move on to something else? Or was it like, I need to get this work experience, but I know that at some point I'm going to move on to do my own thing in the world?
Yeah, I think so. The year before I graduated, I did a summer internship at Bankers Trust, which I don't think they exist anymore. They got bought out by Deutsche Bank. They're an investment bank. And I ended up on the trading floor in the foreign exchange unit. And I was there for 3 months. And in that time, someone retired at the age of 25 because they developed chronic asthma. And they developed it in 3 or 4 months at working on the trading floor. And it was just the pressure had got to them. And the guys, they were saying like, yeah, that happens. Some people can't handle the pressure. And I was like, okay, wow, that really isn't for me. Like, I'm not going to get into a career that's going to, you know, savage my body like that. Like, that's not really what I'm up for. And so when I was at the end of my degree, I got offered three jobs. One was with a management consultancy firm called Bain, if you know those guys. And that sounded really interesting. The work sounded really interesting, but also knew that the hours were like, you know, 80-hour weeks were standard and you're all over the place. And I just didn't feel like that was worth it. That wasn't sort of what I wanted from life. I had other interests that I wanted to explore. Like I wanted that life balance. Like I've always valued that. And so I felt like I needed something that gave me some time for interests outside of that. And then the other two jobs were, one was with the RBA and the other was the Productivity Commission in Canberra. And at the time I didn't have much to base that on. And then kind of in the end just went with the RBA because it was sexier. That I could, you know, reading the AFR, it was, you know, there's always an article about the RBA in the paper, and it does, it controls the price of money. And that's sort of like the key oil in the capitalist system. So it's controlling the price. So it really has a big influence on things. And I thought, well, that sounds cool. That sounds like a good place to be. I want to go check that out and see what's going on there. And then when I got there, it was great. And it's a big learning curve. You get trained in the sort of things that they're looking for. I'm not naturally suited to that kind of work. I realized. So I love the big picture, thinking. I love the philosophy of economics. I love the sort of broad policy direction, all kind of stuff. With the RBA, it's very slow and meticulous and looking, getting right down into granular levels of data and getting a really clear picture of things and really taking your time and you know, being absolutely certain there's no mistakes. And that's just not sort of how I'm cut. And so that was a good learning curve. And that was a good lesson. And so from there, I stuck it out probably a few more years than I should have. In hindsight, but you kind of keep getting bumped around every 6 months. So I started on the labor desk. So in the economics group, they break down the economy into all of its component parts. So there, I was in the prices, wages, and labor section, and then in each section there's a desk. And so I started as a graduate on the labor desk, and so I'm looking at the labor market and all the labor data. And then I did that for like, I think 6 or 9 months. And then I went over to wages. And then from there, I went over to the international economy section and did Japan and China. And then from there, I went into the banking section and did domestic banks. And each time you move, you get this whole window into the economy. And there's all this stuff. It's like, wow, I had no idea that there's this much going on and this much level of detail. And it's all really useful and interesting, all this information. And so I kept sort of, I think, sticking it out. And then eventually I got into the group that was organizing the G20 meetings back in 2006, I think it was, Australia's host year then, part of the secretariat. And that was really interesting as well. That was super interesting. So I stuck around a little because it just kept giving me these great learning opportunities, even though I think, you know, I'd probably already realized pretty early on that I didn't have a long-term career there.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
That's so interesting. You mentioned that even after your degree and obviously doing well in your degree to get offers at places like Bain, that in your different departments within the RBA, you're still learning so much. I find that really cool.
I think I wish I'd sort of had that sort of explained to me at university, that really what I was learning is kind of how to think. I think like if you can come away, one of my professors said it actually, like saying the only thing worth studying is philosophy. Like it's really like you're learning how to think, and what you think about that comes afterwards in your career. And economics is a way of thinking. It's a way of thinking of the world. It's kind of like a language. You have all these component parts and you understand how they fit together and what influences what, but to sort of think logically and to get it, be able to think in numbers, that's sort of the real value of it. And then what you then apply that to is kind of almost neither here nor there, but it's that learning how to think, and which is why I think university is such an amazing time, because your job is just to learn how to think.
For a lot of our listeners who are obviously uni students and students who are graduating soon and potentially getting into jobs like in the RBA, what would be like a typical day at work? I know it was some time ago, but what would be a typical day at work at a place like the RBA?
Yeah, it is probably going back a bit now. Like, I wonder how much it has changed. But I think typically we would monitor the releases coming out. So you have the release schedule. So the ABS is publishing particular releases like the labor force survey or wage price index or something like that. So you've got that on your calendar and you're like, okay, I'm getting ready for that. So when that data drops, there's a lot of activity. It's getting picked up in the financial papers. The investment banks are writing about it. So you're trying to come up with an angle for the executive at the RBA, sort of the governors and the assistant governors and everyone reading it. You're trying to come up with some kind of angle on the data that they're not seeing already in the financial papers. So you've kind of got like when the data drops, typically like at 11:30, you pull the data down, you get the spreadsheets and you go through it, and then you've got to kind of write a report. So you're going to have this report almost ready to go, and you have to be anticipating the trends and knowing what to look for. So like with labor force, so you've had three months in a row of really weak full-time growth. So that's a story. Does that continue this month? Does it not? So you're kind of there anticipating, trying to get ready for this. And I think probably the economics units at the banks would do this as well. The investment banks and retail banks, you're trying to get ahead of the news cycle almost. And so you sort of need to know the trends, you need to know the stories, you need to know what's important. And then when it drops, then you got to pull it in and trying to work with it really quickly and see if the stories you're anticipating are there or they're not. And then writing it up and doing the charts and sharing around. So yeah, so that's sort of one part of the job. And then the other part is like then trying to get into like breaking down the data and trying to come up with stories to help build a better understanding. So maybe there's stuff going on in the state level data, so that there's three months in a row of weak full-time growth. You might break that down and go, oh, look, it's all in New South Wales. And isn't that interesting? So then you kind of share it. Or you might like, oh, look, it's all in the construction industry. So there's different ways of breaking that down. And then so you're just there trying to feed up knowledge through the layers of the RBA eventually to the board and to the governor, so they can make that one decision about interest rates. But they're just like these really hungry beasts at the top of the tree, just pulling up all this knowledge, and it all gets shared around. So everyone, like if you write the labor force report, it goes out to everyone in the economics group and they all get to read it and everyone gets to reflect. And you kind of need to, there's an expectation that you're tracking the whole economy at the same time. So you've got your own picture of the economy and how it's working. Yeah. And then it goes up. So that was my experience in the early days at the RBA.
You've worked as a tutor and research assistant too. Have you thought about pursuing an academic career?
I did think about it for a while. I think again, it was probably a bit slow for how I'm cut. Like I'm kind of a more of a get in, get out kind of guy. I like skimming across the top. I like having a broad view. I like how the big broad themes connect. I found sort of that my exposure to the research, it felt like I just couldn't see myself holding one area of focus for 12 months at a time to do one report or build a whole career around one niche area of something. I've got a lot of respect for people who can do that, but I think it's just not me. Yeah, like I couldn't I have thought about it, but no, I just don't think it's for me.
No, that makes sense. And after the RBA, I believe you start traveling, right? Or would you mind sharing a little bit about your experiences?
Yeah. So after the RBA, well, towards the end there, I had a health scare that it put me in hospital for 3 days. And I just had this, I had no idea what was going on. I was in hospital hooked up to a bunch of machines. And I was just like, I just had this one thought coming back. And like, if this is the end of my life, I'm going to be so disappointed that I didn't get out and do all this stuff that I wanted to do. Because it all, and working with the RBA was cool and it was interesting, but it, like, it wasn't really my passion. I didn't really fit in there super well. And I was hungry for all these other experiences. And they'd always just been on the back burner because I'd always been working full time and that's consuming so much of my energy. Yeah. And I just had this feeling like, wow, life is really short. I've just got to get out there and, you know, like I could spend the rest of my life at the RBA just kicking along and, you know, moving through life like that. And I just thought, I just can't do that. I've got to take my shot now. Who knows what's going to happen? So I quit the RBA. Then I joined a cabaret troupe. They're based in Newcastle. We do sort of performance and cabaret kind of stuff. That I had a passion for that. That was sort of one of my side interests. So I joined a cabaret troupe and we toured around for a while. And then fell in love with Sufi poetry. So I've always been a bit of a poetry nut. So I fell in love with Sufi poetry and Rumi in particular, if you know that character. And so I was like, I want to find out what it's about. So then I went to Turkey and lived in Istanbul for 3 years, living with a Sufi community, there. And yeah, really just not, really just sort of following my nose through that time. I had sort of saved up a bit of money, but sort of just sort of did odd jobs here and there. Picked up a couple of shifts at Sydney Uni, tutoring political economy, and worked at a cafe for a bit, things like this. So yeah, just sort of followed my nose for a while and wasn't particularly career focused through that stage, but had a great time.
Sure. Like, would you mind?
Hey guys, Adam here again. Look, hope you enjoyed that first part of that UQ interview that the University of Queensland Economic Society did with Thomas. We'll be back next week with part two of that interview. So if you enjoyed today, then make sure you tune in next week. Otherwise, we will definitely be back on February the 2nd, Thomas and myself bringing you more Comedian versus Economist. Look forward to talking to you soon.
Comedian versus Economist is a product of Equity Mates Media. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as a substitute for professional finance, legal, or tax advice. The hosts of Comedian vs. Economist are not financial professionals and are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement and, if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. Do not take financial advice from a podcast. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the Equity Mates website where you can find ASIC resources and find a registered financial professional near you. In the spirit of reconciliation, Equity Mates Media and the hosts of Comedian vs. Economist acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea, and community. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today.